Christmas time, a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable time. Indeed, Christmas time is not the time when most of the populace expects to hear a ghost story. But I will endeavor in this ghostly little story to raise the ghost of an idea which shall not put you out of humor with yourselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. I only wish that it might haunt you pleasantly. For Christmas time is a pleasant time, the only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of all people as fellow passengers to the grave. And therefore, though Christmas has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it. Christmas Eve, old tight-fisted and covetous Ebenezer Scrooge sat busy in the shivering chill of his counting house. In the dismal cell that was the next room, his clerk, Bob Cratchit, worked by a stove, the flame kept barely alive with less than one lump of coal to fuel the flickering ember. That afternoon, Scrooge reluctantly looked up as a visitor entered his office. "A Merry Christmas, Uncle!" cried a cheerful voice. It was Scrooge's nephew, Fred, who had arrived full of the spirit of Christmas. "Come dine with us tomorrow, Uncle," said Fred. It was a generous invitation, to which Ebenezer Scrooge sternly replied, "Bah, humbug!" "I am sorry to find you so resolute," replied Fred, "but I will keep my Christmas humor to the last. So a Merry Christmas to you, Uncle." As Fred left, two portly gentlemen, pleasant to behold, arrived at the door with their hats in hand, seeking to collect charitable donations for the poor.
"Am I not taxed enough to help the poor?"
barked Scrooge as he ushered them to the door.
"Are there no prisons? Are there no union workhouses?"
snarled Scrooge.
"Yes, but many can't go there, and many would rather die," stammered one of the gentlemen.
"If they would rather die, then they had better do it and decrease the surplus population," sneered Scrooge, as he summarily dismissed them without a penny.
After closing up for the day and begrudgingly giving Bob Cratchit the next day off for Christmas, Scrooge retired to his gloomy home. As he slid his key into the lock of his front door, an apparition appeared in the door knocker. It was the ghostly face of his former partner, Jacob Marley, who had died 7 years before that very night. Startled, Scrooge entered into his dark, cold house, stepped cautiously up the stairs, and locked himself in his room. He sat down in his chair before the fire and began to eat his gruel. Soon, he noticed the faint tinkling of an unused bell that hung in the corner. One by one, every bell in the house began to ring out, and ring out loudly. Suddenly, Scrooge heard footsteps heavily thumping up the stairs, and with them a clanking noise, as if a person was dragging a heavy chain. A ghostly figure floated through the locked door. It was Jacob Marley, bound in chains and dragging behind him a trail of cash boxes, keys, ledgers, deeds, padlocks, and more chains wrought in steel. Though he saw the death-cold phantom standing before him, Scrooge fought against his senses and growled,
"You're humbug, I tell you, humbug!"
At this the spirit cried, "I have wandered the earth for 7 years as punishment for neglecting the needs of my fellow men. I have come to warn you that you have yet a chance and a hope of escaping this same fate."
You will be haunted by three spirits, Scrooge. Expect the first tomorrow when the clock tolls one. Then, the ghost of Marley floated out through an open window into the bleak, dark night. Scrooge slammed shut the window, went straight to bed without undressing, and exhausted, fell asleep upon the instant. Scrooge awoke. It was still quite dark and extremely cold. Perplexed and deeply bothered with a mix of dread and astonishment as he thought and thought of Marley's ghost, he asked himself, was it a dream or not? As the clock struck one with a deep and melancholy toll, Scrooge all of a sudden recalled Marley's promise of the first ghostly visit. At that, the curtains of his bed were drawn apart by a strange childlike figure dressed in white, from whose head sprung a bright, clear jet of light.
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past?
Scrooge asked the glittering figure.
No, your past, it replied softly.
What brought you here? Asked Scrooge nervously.
Your welfare, said the ghost. Rise and walk with me, he said, and taking Scrooge's hand, the two gently floated through the window. Instantly, the ghost transported Scrooge to the countryside where he had been raised. The city had vanished, as had the darkness and mist. What you see are but shadows of the things that have been, said the ghost. Recognizing every gate, post, and tree, Scrooge was brought to his old school, empty, but not quite deserted. Indeed, Scrooge wept as he saw his poor, forgotten self, as he used to be, a solitary child left behind. The ghost motioned toward the classroom door. It opened, and a little girl darted in. It was Scrooge's little sister, Fan.
Father has sent me in a coach to bring you home, dear brother, said the child. Home forever and ever.
Scrooge reminisced sadly that Fan had died as a woman some years ago and had one child, his nephew, Fred.
In but that moment, the schoolhouse was left behind them, and Scrooge and the ghost were now in the busy thoroughfares of a city, at a certain warehouse door.
The ghost asked Scrooge if he knew it.
Know it, said Scrooge. I was apprenticed here.
They watched as a jolly Christmas party ensued with dancing, singing, and merriment all around. Ebenezer, now a grown young man, and his fellow apprentice Dick Wilkins were leading the way, and with them the jovial old merchant Fezziwig. During the whole of this time, old Scrooge's heart and soul were in the scene with his former self. He remembered everything, and he enjoyed everything.
Quickly now, my time grows short, said the ghost, as the scene faded to the past. Scrooge immediately saw himself at a different time, when he was slightly older, in the prime of life. There was an eager, greedy, restless motion in the eye. He was not alone, but sat by the side of a fair young woman named Belle, in whose eyes there were tears.
You have changed, Ebenezer. A golden idol has displaced me, she said gently, and I release you with a full heart for the love of him you once were, she continued, handing back to him her golden engagement ring.
Spirit, why do you torture me? No more, no more, cried Scrooge.
But there was more. Taken to a more recent Christmas, Scrooge saw the same Belle, now a comely middle-aged matron, surrounded by her delightsome and loving family. As he watched, Scrooge was flooded with a dreadful awareness that he was quite alone in the world. Tormented by these scenes from his past, Scrooge exclaimed,
"Remove me from this place, Spirit! Take me back! Haunt me no longer!"
The light of the ghost was extinguished. Immediately, he was back in his own room and sank into a deep sleep.
Scrooge awoke as again the bell was upon the stroke of one. Scrooge rose from his bed, trembling at the sight of light emanating from the next room. The old hearth was ablaze, the room transformed. Holly, mistletoe, and ivy hung all about. Sitting on a throne of meats, red-hot chestnuts, fruits, plum puddings, cakes, and seething bowls of punch was a jolly giant, glorious to see, who bore in his hand a glowing torch shaped like a cornucopia.
Come in, and know me better, man! I am the ghost of Christmas present, boomed the joyful spirit, who was dressed in a deep green robe bordered in white fur. Spirit, said Scrooge submissively, I went forth last night and learned a lesson. Tonight, if you have aught to teach me, let me profit by it. Touch my robe, laughed the ghost.
The room melted away to reveal the simple home of Bob Cratchit and his humble Christmas Day dinner. In came Bob with Tiny Tim on his shoulder. Alas for Tiny Tim, he bore a little crutch and had his limbs supported by an iron brace. With his contented family gathered around the hearth, Bob proposed a toast. A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears, said Bob.
God bless us, everyone, said Tiny Tim.
Scrooge quietly asked, with an interest he never felt before.
Spirit, tell me if Tiny Tim will live.
I see a vacant seat in the poor chimney corner, replied the ghost, and a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die. Scrooge and the spirit stood alone in an open space. It had been a long night. Strangely, while Scrooge remained unchanged in his outward form, the ghost appeared older. Looking upon the aging ghost, Scrooge was startled to notice a pair of wretched, starving children who appeared from beneath his great robe. Their names are Ignorance and Want, said the spirit, and they belong to man.
Have they no refuge or resource? Cried Scrooge,
and the ghost mocked Scrooge with his own words. Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses? The clock struck 12. Scrooge looked about him for the ghost and saw it not. At the last stroke of midnight, Scrooge beheld a solemn phantom, darkly draped and hooded, coming towards him like a mist along the ground. Bending to his knee, Scrooge asked,
Am I in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come?
The spirit answered not, but pointed downward with his outstretched hand.
Ghost of the future! He exclaimed. I fear you more than any spectre I have seen. But as I know your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear your company and do it with a thankful heart.
The phantom moved away as it had come, and Scrooge followed in its shadow, which bore him up and carried him along. With that, the city seemed to spring up and encompass them of its own accord, and they stood before the stock exchange, where a cluster of men were carelessly discussing the death of a rich business acquaintance.
It's likely to be a very cheap funeral, for upon my life, I don't know of anyone who will go to it, said one fellow with a yawn.
Oh, I don't mind going if a lunch is provided,
observed another with a laugh, a cold, aloof, and unforgiving laugh. They left the busy scene and went to a foul and narrow part of town, to a dingy, filthy pawn shop. The rascally owner, Old Joe, and some shady characters bartered over a collection of personal belongings stolen from some dead man. Scrooge was shuddering from head to foot.
"Spirit, I see," he trembled. "The case of this unhappy man might be my own."
The ghost spread its dark robe before him like a wing, and withdrawing it revealed poor Bob Cratchit's home once again. This time it was very quiet. The Cratchit family was gathered tenderly by the fireplace, but Tiny Tim was missing, gone, his little crutch lying as a memorial upon the mantel. Scrooge was moved with compassion. Pondering the scenes of the night, he asked the ghost, "Tell me, Spirit, who was the dead man whose things were bartered and about whom the men laughed?" In but a misty moment, he found himself in an overgrown, weed-choked churchyard. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to a neglected tomb, trembling. Scrooge crept toward it, and following the finger, read upon the gravestone his own name, Ebenezer Scrooge. Shaking and clutching at the spirit's robe, Scrooge cried out, "Spirit, hear me. I am not the man I once was. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone." Mysteriously, the form began to shrink. Wide-eyed, Scrooge watched as it collapsed. It became ever smaller, dwindled down, and transformed into a bedpost. Yes, and the bedpost was his own. "I will live in the past, the present, and the future," Scrooge repeated as he scrambled out of bed. "The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven and Christmas time be praised." Scrooge's heart swelled. He opened his window and, laughing and crying in the same breath, began to shout, "Merry Christmas to one and all." He called downward to a passing boy, promising a shilling and a half crown to deliver a huge Christmas turkey to the Cratchit house. Scrooge dressed himself in his best, then went out upon the street, greeting everyone he met with a good-humored and delighted smile. He happened upon the portly gentleman who had been collecting for charity the day before. He offered his deepest apology for his previous behavior, and he pledged them a huge donation. Scrooge then found himself at Fred's door, and knocking, asked if he could come to dinner. It was a wonderful party, with wonderful games, wonderful unanimity, wonderful happiness. But the next morning, Scrooge arrived early at the office to catch Bob Cratchit 18 and a half minutes late in his arrival. Feigning anger, Scrooge began to scold Bob, and then suddenly laughed. "A Merry Christmas, Bob! A merrier Christmas, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family. Make up the fires and buy another coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit." All and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father.
He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well. May that truly be said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.